Our next case this morning is number 044212, Eric D. Trout.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. With the time today, I basically want to concentrate on what I believe are the most fundamental issues in this case, which are the effect on the restraints of freedom of speech under the First Amendment of the Constitution, and also the due process requirements of the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. The genesis of the contempt hearing, which is the subject matter of this case, is an order which was granted on my motion to alter and amend a judgment of the district court.
But before you get too much further, Mr. Trout, I wonder if you could explain something procedurally to me. If this order, the ultimate order that's before us, is a criminal conviction for criminal contempt, then we can see why we would have appellate jurisdiction. But I have trouble seeing how an order suspending you from practice of law for 5 years and saying that you should take some legal ethics classes and ask the court's permission for readmission matches up with the criminal contempt procedures, which seem to envision a prison or a fine. If this is really de facto a disciplinary matter conducted by the Southern District of Illinois, I don't know why this court is the appropriate body to review that kind of decision. So maybe you could clarify for me what exactly we have before us.
Well, that is, Your Honor, part of the confusion in this case is that when the court decided to take its action, it had a choice to make. It came to a fork in the road. It could either pursue a disciplinary proceeding and follow the due process requirements in attorney disciplinary matters and the local rules regarding those proceedings, or it could pursue a criminal contempt proceeding, which is completely different, and fulfill the due process requirements of a criminal contempt proceeding. In this case, the court did not follow the rules of attorney discipline and initiate a disciplinary proceeding. The court did not do that. The court issued a contempt citation and took the route of a criminal contempt proceeding. And then at the end of that proceeding, rather than imposing a sentence which is permissible for criminal contempt, chose to impose an attorney discipline in lieu of what was permissible in the proceedings that were started by the court.
Well, and that, you've restated my question in a way. I can see all of that from the record, but what I'm trying to figure out right now is, and I have to say this is made much more difficult by the fact that you didn't show up for the hearing, because I imagine that the first words out of your mouth would have been, I need to know what kind of hearing I'm participating in. If I'm defending a Section 401 criminal contempt proceeding, obviously there are certain motions you might have wanted to make. You might have wanted to ask for recusal. You might have wanted to ask for the appointment of a prosecutor, a number of other things. If it morphed somehow into a disciplinary proceeding, you might have said other things. But of course, all that happened, as far as we know, is the judge was there and you weren't there, and the judge had warned you that if you didn't go, he would regard that as contempt. I know you have things that you would like to say about that, but at least factually, you know, that's what had been said. And we're left with this mess of procedures.
And, Your Honor,
and perhaps no appellate jurisdiction.
Well, I believe the court would have appellate jurisdiction even if it were considered a disciplinary matter, because there are still constitutional protections that attorneys have for due process in the context of an attorney disciplinary matter. However, my position is I did file pleadings with the court that enumerated the due process requirements and the local rules in attorney disciplinary matter and in a contempt proceeding to try to get clarification from the court, and I informed the court that under both due process requirements that the judge is required to recuse himself when it involves disrespect or any type of personal attack against the judge. And I made those requirements abundantly clear to the court, and the court chose to ignore those admonitions.
Ignore is a strong word. On page 4 of the district court's order, he does say the undersigned district judge now certifies that he did witness firsthand contemptuous conduct by Attorney Eric Trout. Now, that's a circumstance under the statute which, if it's satisfied, allows the judge to act immediately on his own. Now, one could contest whether those criteria were met or not, but the judge does make a finding that he witnessed firsthand conduct which would allow him to act rather than referring it to a different panel of judges.
And again, Your Honor, he makes that statement in his final order and is contrary to the statements and the actions that he took prior to his final findings and order, because prior to that, he had stated that there wasn't any direct contempt, there wasn't anything that was done in his presence in the courtroom that would constitute contempt, and all of the things in the show cause order were all things and statements and things that were made outside the presence of the courtroom.
But why should we not understand this, particularly in light of his earlier order, to refer to the fact that you didn't come, against his admonition that if you didn't show up on November the 12th, he was going to regard it as contempt? Because he told you that, and that couldn't have been spoken about until the day of the final order.
That's correct, Your Honor. And again, it goes back to one of my grounds for constitutional violation, which was his refusal to allow me to file pleadings in my defense in this matter. And every single request I made for leave to file requests were denied by the judge, I believe, because he would not recuse himself as required by the Supreme Court and the local rules. And I made it clear in my motion that I asked to file to have that hearing continued, that I had over a dozen other hearings with multiple judges and multiple clients at that same time on that same date.
Now, but you give me support for that. I found that a very difficult aspect of your case, because either you developed all 11 hearings and 16 clients on November the 11th, which seems unlikely to me, but there's nothing in the record, or you knew at some point before that, and you didn't attach any notices from other courts. There's just nothing. You just sort of said, you suddenly, out of the blue, had all of these hearings, and without information to know exactly when they arose, under what circumstances, who were the judges, what efforts you had made to move any of them. It seems to me within the discretion of a district court to say, if you only tell me about this the day before, I'm going to deny it.
Well, first, Your Honor, I was not permitted to file my motion for continuance to provide all of that information. The only thing I was permitted to do by that judge was to seek leave to file a motion for continuance. And I filed a request for leave to file a motion for continuance so I could provide the court with whatever information they required to substantiate the conflicts on that date.
But you filed that motion on the 10th of November.
That's right, because...
And so the judge may have thought you had conflicts for 2 days later, you should have told me sooner.
And the court did not give me the opportunity to provide that information. Once he received my request for leave to file my motion for continuance, the judge could have, by phone conference or whatever means, immediately contacted me and asked me to provide the dates and the judges so he could contact them himself.
I'm saying this judge probably looked at it and said, it's 2 days before the hearing, you want leave to file a motion for continuance, but it's too late. I don't care who it is. I don't care what court it is. It's too late.
Well, but the problem is we never got to that point because the judge...
No, you did get to that point. Right. And my point is the judge evaluated that motion as too late in the day.
Well, and when I'm in a position where I have to choose, I have one judge with one matter at one time, and I have over a dozen other matters that day before other judges in another district, and I can either,
When did they... Well, it's not in the record, never mind, but it's...
I mean, I can either...
Well, that's a choice lawyers have to make all the time.
That's right. I made the choice.
Your complaint was that he didn't contact you about a date that you could be there, right?
Correct.
As was his practice?
Correct.
But he's not required to do that, though, is he?
No, he's not required to do that, Your Honor. And all I can do as an attorney is when the conflicts arise, to make the court aware of the conflict and weigh the balance of multiple judges finding me in contempt and multiple clients finding me having committed malpractice for not appearing at their hearings, or to simply fail to accommodate one judge and one hearing and make me the only person involved. And I chose as an attorney to put my duty to my clients and to these other judges ahead of my own personal good fortune.
We can't evaluate that because apparently there's nothing in the record to show when those other cases were sent for him, what courts they were in, and that kind of info.
Right, because the judge refused to allow me to file my motion to provide information. And all of this could have been avoided, I believe, had the judge followed the constitutional mandates and the mandates of the local rules and recused himself as the judge in this matter because of his personal bias and the fact that the whole proceeding involved personal attacks that he felt were made against him personally.
But this is the same judge who gave you a two-week continuance, no questions asked, for medical reasons, didn't ask for any documentation, didn't just took your word for it as an officer of the court.
And the reason, Your Honor, that's exactly the reason why all these other conflicts arose, because during that period of time, I was in the hospital with a very serious spinal viral infection, and I was undergoing spinal taps. It was a very protracted, painful process, and during that time of my absence, my office rescheduled a multitude of other matters that I would not have recommended to you. So that's exactly why I was put in the predicament I was in, because all of these matters, and that's why it is in the record, that all of the other courts contacted me or my office, and in this case in my office, to arrange scheduling for those matters. And one judge in this case, it didn't do that. And when I first became aware that all of these other matters were scheduled at the same time as my hearing, I immediately notified the court.
You never told Judge Reagan that all of this stuff was going on. It's not, you said illness. You didn't tell Judge Reagan what it was. You didn't tell Judge Reagan that other courts were scheduling things until 2 days before the hearing.
Because first, I didn't know about it until that time, and secondly,
well, you don't know that.
I was prohibited from filing a motion.
No, he gave me permission to respond to the concerns that he had outlined to the order. That's what the order to show cause is. Show cause. He didn't want you to file lots of other stuff, but
he told me I could respond to the show cause order, and I could file no other pleadings in that matter. And I had to seek leave if I wanted to file anything other than the single response that he put in the order that I could file in responding to the show cause order. So when I filed my request to seek a continuance and file a substantive motion on those matters, he said no. He denied my request for leave to file a continuance to give him the circumstances of why I needed that continuance. And I believe that that was an abuse of discretion, because had I not been prohibited, I could have just filed my substantive motion immediately. But the order that he issued to me said you can file one response to these accusations, no other pleadings can be filed. And I had to seek leave before I could even file any other things besides that one response.
How many states are you admitted to practice in?
One.
And that's Illinois?
No, actually, it's Texas. I relocated here from Texas and had gotten admitted to the Northern District of Illinois.
On your Texas license?
I'm sorry?
On your Texas license?
Yes.
And you never mentioned this Oklahoma business in the brief or this presentation, but at one time were you admitted in Oklahoma?
I was admitted in Oklahoma, and I resigned after I was admitted in Texas. I resigned my Oklahoma membership after I was admitted in Texas, and the reason why it wasn't in my brief is because it wasn't relevant to the contempt proceeding.
But it's not relevant to the contempt proceeding when what started all of this out was the notification from the Oklahoma Supreme Court to the Southern District.
What started this was the judge's order granting my motion to alter or amend that judgment
Wait, so was Mr. Relevant?
And in that order, he found me guilty of professional misconduct without any due process, without any notice, without any opportunity to respond or be heard on these mysterious findings of professional misconduct that he put in that original order. That was the genesis of the complaint, and I'm going to lose my...
Mr. Trout, let me ask you one more question. You had practiced in the course of Illinois prayer hawk, didn't you? Is that how you do it?
Actually, I had pretty much a federal practice.
How many district courts you admitted in?
The Southern District of Illinois and the Eastern District of Missouri in St. Louis. I'm admitted in the Eastern District of Missouri as well.
So your practice is limited to the federal courts?
Primarily. I believe there may have been one or two instances where I was admitted pro hac vice in the state courts of Illinois.
Thank you, Mr. Trout. We'll hear now from Mr. Montgomery.
May it please the court. Following up a little bit on his failure to show up for the hearing, in front of Judge Reagan because of the 11 hearings for 16 other clients. Presumably those were all federal court hearings because he wasn't licensed to practice in the state of Illinois. And those would have been easily, I think, taken care of with reference to Judge Reagan. I'm going to be in front of Judge whoever in Benton on that day or in East St. Louis right down the hall from you, Judge. And obviously there's nothing in the record. His excuse that the court did not allow him to file any pleadings so that he couldn't make a record on this continuance is belied by his ability to file not one but two motions for leave to file motions in which multiple page pleadings in which he listed, for instance, the 11 hearings for 16 clients, et cetera, and had the ability, obviously, at that point to say, here's what I'm going to be in front of, Judge. This is the problem I have. He says that he...
Mr. Gunning, I just want to say, unless Southern Illinois is really different from what we see, motions for leave to file pleadings often have as an attachment a copy of the proposed material that would be filed, which the court understands, you know, hasn't been filed yet. You're asking for permission to file it. So did he do anything like that?
No, there's nothing attached to these motions, Judge, of any kind. And the court has really treated these motions anyway, as he did with the first motion for continuance because of the illness. As the court noted, he granted that without requiring any proof or any doctor's note or anything, and treated it as a motion and granted it.
But Mr. Gunning, I wonder if you could go back and help me out with this procedural mess, because the criminal contempt power is definitely one thing, and attorney discipline is another, and here we have this hybrid ruling from Judge Reagan, which winds up looking a lot like an attorney discipline order. And I'm concerned both about the kind of change in gear, and I'm also concerned about the apparent assumption that one of the penalties authorized under Section 401 is not fine or imprisonment, but an attorney discipline. You can see the general problem.
It is an odd procedural case. And when I sat down to take a look at it after my appointment, the way I looked at it was that there was a pending attorney discipline matter in which the court allowed Mr. Trout to be able to practice law in the district and said, but, you know, watch yourself, basically. And then when Mr. Trout disagreed with that watch yourself language, the court had an opportunity at that point, I think, to make it to, as Mr. Trout said, at the fork of the road, he could have made it just a disciplinary matter and referred it to however he wanted to refer it under the rules, but he felt compelled to call it contempt of court and went down that road. And the only error he made in going down that road was the failure to appoint a prosecutor under Rule 42, which is really a harmless error in this case.
But why isn't the remedy also, I mean, one possible way for us to deal with this case is to send it back to Judge Reagan and say, you know, there are different paths here, but the process varies a bit depending on which path, and you need to make it clear what you're doing so that Mr. Trout can defend himself appropriately either way.
Right. Well, I think what the judge did was when Mr. Trout did not show up at his hearing, and the judge found him in contempt for the variety of reasons, the judge then, rather than impose the penalties under 401, took the contempt of court finding and took it back into the disciplinary action and took his license away in Illinois. I think he had a choice there to do either. And he chose to make it to use it in terms of attorney discipline. And
so are you familiar with appeals from attorney discipline in the various districts to this court?
I am not, Your Honor.
I haven't seen that, which is what makes me worry about it. That's a very reasonable way to interpret what happened. I don't know if it's the only way, but certainly a reasonable way. But if that's what happened, then I wonder whether he's really asking the right people for relief. And I also wonder about waiver issues, of course, when he didn't show up at the hearing.
Right. He raises questions, as the court knows, about due process within 401 and Rule 42 for Judge Reagan to get to the point where he could make the finding and then take that finding back into the attorney disciplinary. So when I looked at this the first time, I assumed that was the hook that got him up here to Chicago. The fact that he raised those, you know, that he was complaining about the process that got him the criminal contempt conviction and raised those five or six or due process arguments that he raised.
Now, we're calling it a conviction, but usually when this court reviews criminal convictions, there's a judgment. It's called a judgment of conviction. You can see exactly, you know, what the sentence is and the whole thing. You're familiar with them, I'm sure. But no such thing that I could find in this record.
It was just a finding of criminal contempt and then a taking of his license. Judge. It is an odd procedural case, but I don't think that there's, I mean, other than the jurisdictional argument that might be there, there's nothing what Judge Reagan did really that is fatal to the ultimate finding he made, which was to take Mr. Trout's license. The issues that he raised, as I said, the failure to appoint a prosecutor, he was required to do that under Rule 42, but it really is harmless in this case because nothing was ever prosecuted. And Mr. Trout spent a lot of time talking about his failure to recuse himself, but the rule says that you have to recuse yourself at the trial or the hearing, and there really was no hearing in this case because Mr. Trout never showed.
Did the court follow its own rules for disciplining towns? Could it have transferred this at the fork in the road, as you say, to a...
I think what the local rules of the Southern District say are that if the judge is made aware of an attorney disciplinary matter, he refers it to counsel, who then performs an investigation. And I think in this case, Your Honor, where there was already a pending matter with Mr. Trout, that it really didn't fit into the rules. And I think when it doesn't fit into the rules, I don't think he has to follow it. And even if he did have to follow it, there was no due process. There were no due process implications to Mr. Trout.
What about the provision that says if the complaint is predicated on the complaint of the judge of the court, the hearing shall be conducted before a panel of other judges of this court appointed by the chief judge?
Well, in this case, in fact, Your Honor, you're right, and that's indeed what it says, but in this case, there wouldn't have been a panel left, because if you take away the panel of judges that gave him the initial discipline in the Oklahoma matter, of which he is critical and claims bias, and then take away the Benton judges, of whom he is critical and claims bias, and then take away Judge Reagan, of whom he is critical and claims bias, I think there's one judge left in East St. Louis who would form this panel. So it really could not have happened in this case anyway.
So some judge, you say that some judge would have to, two judges would have to sit under the rule of necessity.
To claim bias against, he basically claimed bias against the whole district.
But the chief judge don't make any decisions to who's going to hear on this?
In this case, the chief judge wasn't even involved in this at any point.
So we've got at best a Jack Wired disciplinary proceeding, if that's what we want to call it.
Right, although I think you could also look at it as a real disciplinary proceeding, given that there was one going on already.
and the judge proceeded then in criminal contempt.
Right.
Now, once he found criminal contempt, could he have said, okay, I have this finding, convene a panel, you know, under the rules, perhaps he could have done that, but again, there's no panel left to convene after Mr. Trout's claims of bias.
Well, because this, as I understand, when the full court decided to suspend Mr. Trout for 5 years, it was Judge Reagan who issued the order rescinding that with the language that Mr. Trout found offensive. But what Judge Reagan was signaling was that, you know, maybe he was going to get suspended after all. And then this later conduct perhaps convinced Judge Reagan that the full court's order had to be reinstated. It is actually the same length of time.
Right, and that's what I refer to, Your Honor, when I say there's a pending matter, so
right.
It really doesn't fit into the rules as something that the court just became aware of and needed to start a disciplinary proceeding under the local disciplinary rules. It does not fit into that formula.
You know, I got a minute left, and I'll just touch briefly on the recusal again. The Rule 42 requires recusal at the trial or the hearing, and there was no trial or hearing in this case, and it is Mr. Trout's chief constitutional violation in this case that he didn't get an independent judge, where he says in his argument that he made it abundantly clear, and in fact, there would be an argument that he made it clear at all that he wanted another judge in the case. He had a couple throwaway lines in one of his briefs about a judge should be appointed, but he was really referring to the local rules in those cases, not the federal rule, and he didn't refer specifically to Rule 42 at all. But again, the fact that the judge did not recuse himself in this case is not error because there was no trial or hearing at which he was needed to recuse himself. Without anything further, I'll sit down.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. Mr. Trout, I believe you had used all your time, but you had, the last minute wasn't an answer to the court's question, so I will give you 1 minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. And again, just a couple of quick points. First of all, he could have followed the disciplinary procedures and made it an attorney disciplinary matter. He did not do that. He made it a contempt proceeding matter, and to me it's not any different than if it had been a criminal trial and then the court imposed a sentence that was outside of the mandated guidelines for what they were charged with and what they were convicted of, and that's exactly what happened here. I was convicted of criminal contempt and then sentenced outside the mandated guidelines for sentence for criminal contempt.
But you really are not arguing that you would have preferred prison time, which
no,
would have been within 401.
No, what I would
surely not.
What I would prefer to do is going to be an attorney disciplinary matter that I didn't give a notice.
Oh, I understand that, but if it was going to be a contempt matter, you can't say that you would rather have had prison time. If it was as labeled a contempt matter.
Right, but I believe that a court who was unbiased would have reviewed the actions in the contempt and made a tempered sentence based upon the guidelines that judges are given for that. I certainly would have preferred a disciplinary action, and if this is what the court was doing, then they completely confused the defendant on what his notice was, what the procedures were going to be, suspension of my license was going to be imposed, or any kind of attorney discipline was going to be imposed if I failed to appear at that hearing.
It's a suspension of your right to practice in the Southern District of Illinois. I assume, aside from whatever independent action the Eastern District of Missouri might take, or you know, any district in Texas that you may be admitted to practice before, et cetera, isn't at the moment effective. Maybe it will be if they do something, but...
Right, and the recusal element is required regardless of which track you take. And I never claimed any bias that any other judge besides Judge Reagan could have heard this matter. That has never been one of my... The only person that I stated couldn't hear this matter was the judge who was personally attacked, and that formed the basis of the contempt proceeding. There was nothing in any of my pleadings or anything that suggested that it was a bias on anyone's part.
You attacked the Benton judges, actually, but that's...
Well, I think that that's who we spoke to.
Yeah. And you attacked them.
But when I contacted the band judges, none of them stated that they alleged misconduct on my part. So I don't know that there would be any bias by those judges, or that they would, or that I couldn't, because the rule states that the defendant can consent to a biased judge to remain. And there's nothing to say that I wouldn't have consented to other judges besides Judge Reagan hearing the matter in that instance.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case will be taken under advisement.